here's a scenario that seems like it could play out very easily. We're already kind of tipping into a recession because Americans and most of the rest of the world, at least the developed world, they're running out of money. You know, credit card debt is at all-time highs, and the interest on credit card debt is in the mid-20% range. So anybody who's carrying an ongoing balance is being just drained dry by their credit cards. So we're in the death spiral part of the process. And that means gold and silver are probably good protection from currency crises for a long way to go from here. You know, this isn't a time to be cashing out. This is still maybe a time to be adding cautiously to precious metals positions because, you know, we could see some really outrageous numbers. Certainly in gold and definitely in silver in the not too distant future.
John Rubino, good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
Hey, Andy, it's great to talk to you again.
It's great to have you on again. It really is. And to all my viewers and listeners, it's been about maybe roughly 12 months since I had you on, and we just, it's great to finally reconnect, if you would. A lot of thoughts about the economy, and there's a lot of confusion. I get emails all the time about my thoughts on the economy, and so I want to start there. Oh, actually, let's start with gold and silver. What's that sniffing out? And before we do that, can you give your, you got to be a huge Substack. Can you give us a link to your Substack or what's your address on your Substack so people can read and follow you there?
Yeah, I'm at rubino.substack.com, and it's a newsletter aimed at finding actionable ideas for the world going crazy as it is. And so far, it turns out there's no shortage of things we can be doing to prepare for what's coming.
Yeah, it is a crazy world, and it's actually, I'm glad you have this newsletter because, again, I can point people to you, and I get emails literally every week about what do I do? What do I do? So to all my viewers and listeners, this is a good resource for you and a good place to start. So let's talk about gold, well above 4K now. We had a brief correction maybe 4 weeks ago. Silver's over 50, well above $50 an ounce now, US dollars. What's that sniffing? Work that out for me. What's that telling us right now in the global economy, I would argue?
Well, the gold and silver story was always for the past, you know, 20 to 30 years, been that the big countries of the world, now that they're doing fiat currency experiments where their currencies aren't backed by anything, right, and they, you know, they have unlimited credit cards effectively to borrow and spend as much money as they want to, they're abusing that power and taking on way too much debt, creating way too much currency to finance that debt, and that would eventually lead to inflation, which is to say the, you know, a disorderly decline in the value of the big fiat currencies. And we're finally there, you know, this morning, as we're speaking right now, gold and silver are both way up. And silver is outpacing gold, which is normally how the late stages of precious metals bull markets go. You know, you begin with gold because that's the big name in the sector. When you're nervous about what currencies are going to do, you buy that gold, the gold goes up. And then you realize that for the 1 ounce of gold, you can get a whole pile of silver, you know, and your aesthetic sense takes over. You want that big pile of really gorgeous coins. And so people start buying silver, and that being a very thinly traded market starts to go straight up. That's where we are now. So the question is, you know, is this a gold and silver run like the previous two in, let's see, 1999 and in 2007, 2008. Anyhow, the past two long precious metals runs we've had gold and silver topping out. Well, gold not quite at this level in real terms, and silver at $50 an ounce or so. So the question is now, is this move like those moves, or is this one a very different animal because this is the end of the fiat currency experiment? And I would argue that, the latter probably, that we're towards the end of the experiment now because governments are just awash in debt. The interest on their debt is soaring. You know, the U.S. pays more in interest now on its debt than it pays for defense. Mm-hmm. You can't manage something like that for very long. So we're in the death spiral part of the process. And that means gold and silver are probably good protection from currency crises for a long way to go from here. You know, this isn't a time to be cashing out. This is still maybe a time to be adding cautiously to precious metals positions because, you know, we could see some really outrageous numbers. Certainly in gold and definitely in silver in the not too distant future. And you want to be there for that. You know, you don't want to miss the big parabolic move at the end.
Yeah. So you said a key word that I want to really dial into. You said fiat. And I think that is very important because I was in the camp and it's not like I'm not in the camp, but I'm indifferently, whereas anti-dollar, or just, hey, the dollar's going down. And I think that's the wrong question. I think dollar relative to what? Because all central banks seem to be doing the same, which is printing a lot of money, right? So I see gold, silver as the anti-fiat, if you would. And I think that's the real question. Work that out with me. Where are you at? Because there's really not, it doesn't seem like there's a safe currency, if you would. And the only safety would be gold and silver. But work that out for me or give me your thoughts on that again.
Well, governments have screwed up their currencies since we've had currencies.
Right? You know,
a government will start borrowing too much money and then debasing their currency in some way. And then people lose faith in the currency, its value collapses. And then each and every time we've gone back to gold and silver because that's humanity's original money. And it can't be debased because you have to dig precious metals out of the ground. And that's hard and getting harder to do all the time. So that limits the supply of those things. And because they're rare, they tend to hold their value going forward. And that's where people pile into when they suspect that their government is screwing up their currency. Now, what's happening now that's different is that in the past, currency crises used to be one country devaluing their currency dramatically. In the context of the sound money world, everybody else was on the gold standard. You screwed up your currency. You have a crash, and then you go back to gold and silver. Well, now it's the whole world, basically, or at least all the major countries. They have fiat currencies. They're inflating them away at varying rates. And so this is going to be different in that sense, in the sense that it's a global currency crisis, because, you know, if the dollar starts tanking, that pulls down the euro, that pulls down the Swiss franc, the British pound is going to crash no matter what, and China, the Chinese yuan is being inflated away really aggressively as well for their own reasons. Yeah, so all of these things are going to happen kind of simultaneously once they get going, and you can make the case that they're already happening.
Right.
That we had this burst of inflation during our response to the COVID pandemic. So the cost of living is already much higher than it was a decade ago. And so they're hoping for like 3% inflation in the US going forward and thinking that fixes things. But it doesn't actually, because most people's cost of living is already way up. So having it grow by only 3% a year is still a crisis for the average person. And, you know, we've got a recession coming, which we can talk about the details of that in a minute. But let's say a recession happens, governments usually respond to recessions with dramatic increases in spending, which means if we're running $2 trillion a year deficits now, we'll run $3 or $4 trillion deficits in the face of the next recession. And that'll just spike interest costs, which they have to be borrowed, so that will spike next year's deficit, et cetera, et cetera, as we enter a death spiral where the currencies just start to fall off a table. And I would say that we're basically there. We're at the beginning stage of that, and there's no way out of it. So, yeah, fiat currencies are currencies that allow governments to do this, basically. In other words, they're not backed by anything, so governments are free to borrow and spend as much as they want. We started that experiment in 1971, and it's kind of come to fruition now. So the question is, what happens after, because it's kind of guaranteed that we're having that big currency crisis. So, do we do a currency reset where we go back to a gold standard? Do we bring Bitcoin into the mix? Or we do we just, run it out and have kind of a Weimar Germany hyperinflation that nobody can predict the outcome of, and hopefully we'll do the smart thing, which is a currency reset sooner rather than later. But when have the guys in charge of most of the big countries done the smart thing in our lifetimes? And the answer is almost never. So it's completely possible that we have just a horrendous currency slash financial crisis in the not too distant future, and then we basically just have to live through that. And right now, we should be trying to prepare ourselves for it,
Yeah. Okay. So you brought up a couple of things. You talked about a recession or a coming recession. And I could argue, I'm not saying this that we are in it now, but I could argue that we're in that right now. What exactly does this look like to you? I just got an email from a listener just today who asked you basically, what do I do? And I say that too because it can be. If you look at the spectrum, and this was my advice that I give to him, what you have to do is you have to look at the entire spectrum of deflation, inflation, or hyperinflation, and everything in between, and then prepare your portfolio or your life really in that spectrum. What are the, and I'm not going to give you odds, but yeah, that's, but it's just that we're in trouble, if you would. But what would you say that looks like over the next few to several years here? What would be your best guess?
Well, here's a scenario that seems like it could play out very easily. We're already kind of tipping into a recession because Americans and most of the rest of the world, at least the developed world, they're running out of money. Credit card debt is at all-time highs, and the interest on credit card debt is in the mid-20% range. So anybody who's carrying an ongoing balance is being just drained dry by their credit cards. And there's a growing number of people in that situation. Student loans are now having to be
Yeah.
paid upon, and a growing number of borrowers are starting to default on their student loans because of that. Car loans, same thing. The delinquency rates on these subprime car mortgages that people have been taking out in the last decade are spiking. So basically, you're not going to see people go out and spend a lot of money in frivolous ways because they've already done that and now they're paying a price for it. So you're hearing, companies like McDonald's, other fast food places, say, nobody's coming in for breakfast anymore. They're either eating breakfast at home or they're going to convenience stores and buying, shrink-wrapped breakfast burritos at 7-Eleven or something like that, which is, it's a horrifying thought that people are having to do that. But when people can't afford fast food, that's a sign they can't afford much of anything. So expect consumer spending to trend down in the year ahead. And we're a consumer spending driven economy. So expect the economy to slow down and then drop into negative territory. That will cause an equities bear market because equities tend to fall during recessions because corporate profits fall during recessions. And since we're wildly overvalued in equities right now, we've got a major equity bubble, and let a downturn begin in equities prices, and it's liable to just turn into an avalanche. So we'll have a huge equities bear market, maybe a crash, and then the government will have to step in and start bailing out the sectors of the economy that may be broken by an equities bear market and a recession. And then people start looking at the extra $5 trillion that the government is having to throw at all these broken sectors in the economy, and they'll start wondering if that means the currency is becoming worthless. So nobody will want to hold U.S. bonds, and that'll spike interest rates. And then boom, you get a Federal Reserve with no tools left to fix anything. Financial markets who absolutely do not trust anything the government's trying to do in any event. And a currency crisis. Nobody wants to hold dollars. There's a thing called the crack-up boom in the Austrian School of Economics that I'm kind of describing here. When when people, a critical mass of people, lose faith in a currency, they just start dumping it. You know, as soon as they get paid, they buy real stuff with that currency. So you see the price of real things like farmland and gold and silver and oil and yada yada, you know, go through the roof, which is to say the value of the currency relative to those things just crashes. And then, you know, that's it for the currency. People give up on it. And then something has to happen at that point. And, you know, we'll see what that point is. But I think, you know, the scenario I just sketched out, each of those things follow logically from the previous thing. And that takes us to, you know, let's say 2029, something like that. And the whole system is broken. So we'll see. But that's a very plausible scenario.
Yeah, you mentioned crack up boom. I've read that term many different times. I had a friend of mine explain it to me like this. He said, expect inflation in everything that you need or want, and deflation in everything that you don't need and want.
Yeah.
I thought that was
Well,
well said.
yeah, and it is well said, you know, because that, and or think back to the 1970s. We've already had a version of this, only a really mild version. But, you know, we had spiking inflation back then, and life got much harder for people. You know, energy got super expensive, food got expensive. And we thought for a little while that the dollar was dying at the time. So this is a much more serious version of that because the numbers are all way bigger and everybody's much more deeply in debt. But yeah, the people who least deserve to be hurt by this are the ones who get hurt, like regular consumers who trust the government, for instance, who own a lot of cash and have government bonds in their investment savings portfolios, and who are trying to get by day to day. You know, they're working at their jobs, they're trying to pay for their food and gas and things like that. Well, those things are going to go way up. Life is going to get much harder for you if you know, you're sitting on a pile of dollars which go down in value while the things you need to spend those dollars on go up in value. And that's just the way those things work. And then, of course, you get political chaos when that happens, because if people are being just bled dry by an economy that the government engineered, then who wants that government in power anymore? You know, so the peasants will pick up their pitchforks, head to the castle, and pull the aristocracy out. Hopefully, only in a financial way, but maybe in a physical way too. You just don't know, you know. So we get kind of a French Revolution scenario going,
How
and
many times
all
have
of
we
that
seen
is
that?
coming.
How many times have we seen that throughout history? Talk a little bit about two things I want to hit on next. One is for all of our investors that tune in, just in portfolio construction. Talked about, like, again, I just had an email today. Is like, what, how should I construct? And I don't give financial advice, but I just told them what I do. Big chunk of that physical, and then mining stocks and other natural resource stocks, a few wood stuff that we need. But talk about how you would talk to investors about portfolio construction, whether we have hyperinflation, whether we have a deflationary scenario, or whether we have a stagflation or whatever, just in that spectrum. Yeah, how would you? What advice, non-financial advice, what advice would you give?
Well, on the financial side, you want to shift your finances out of financial assets. In other words, things that governments can inflate away and into real stuff, you know, so gold, silver, farmland, et cetera, et cetera. And as far as your life goes, you know, that's a big intellectual challenge right now in the age of AI. But you know, interestingly, if you're 18 years old and you're looking for a career, for the longest time now, people have been starting, you know, they used to say learn to code, but now people are saying learn to plumb, you know, become a plumber, learn to do electrical work, things like that, because the physical stuff that AI can't do is what is going to be in demand for the longest amount of time. You know, the handyman shall inherit the world, and so that's very good investment advice, or career advice right now. And it's the exact opposite of what you got for the past 30 or 40 years. So yeah, and if you've got a job, you want to make yourself as as indispensable as possible. And that means don't just show up, do your 8 hours and leave. You know, look around at what your bosses want and what would make them happy, and be the person that supplies that for your bosses, because then you're the last one laid off when really, when things get really crazy. And within your community, you don't want to be this loner with a bunch of gold coins and a shotgun, because you're easy pickings if that's who you are. So you want to be part of a community, however you define that. But you want people who have your back, and you want to have their back, and you've got a much better chance of coming through the future disruptions in good shape if you've got people, you know. So throw all of that together, and what you end up with is kind of the prepping lifestyle, really. A lot of what our grandparents did just naturally, where they were part of a community, they had a garden, they saved real money, and they considered land a very valuable thing to have. You know, all of a sudden those things are back in style now in a big way. So, you know, you look at what the price of homestead type land has done in the past 15 years or so. It's gone through the roof. And you look at what the billionaires are doing. They're buying farmland. Bill Gates is the biggest owner of farmland in the United States right now. So, you know, a lot of people are out there providing examples of how we should live going forward.
No, that's great advice. And I guess I'll ask this question, and I think I know what you're going to say, but I want to ask it anyways. You mentioned farmland a few times just now. So, John, I can't afford a farm. I'm in either the urban area of a city or the suburbs here. I can't own a farm. What do I do besides networking with my neighbors and being in a community? What would you tell that person?
As far as being able to grow, let's say 20 or 30% of your own food, you know, which is a really good goal. The more urban you get, the harder it is, obviously, and the more you're at risk. If there's a disruption in the food supply chain, and you're in downtown San Francisco or someplace like that,
Good
there's
luck.
only so much you can do. You know, you're looking at a very stressful time. But there's still things you can do. You know, there are window gardens that people do in cities, and most suburban houses have backyards, right? So you take an eighth of an acre of your backyard and turn it into a garden, and do it right. You know, learn how to do raised beds and things like that, and you can still provide some of your own food. And even if it's not, you know, 50%, 10% is still something. And if you're in a place where you can get chickens or something like that, that's the new in thing, right? Everybody owns chickens because they will
Breezy.
happily, yeah. I mean, they'll eat your kitchen clippings and, you know, the stuff that you would normally throw into a compost pile. You give to the chickens, they'll eat it. They'll give you eggs in return, and so that's a really high protein way to recycle. So there's a million things you can do. And you know, rabbits, I'm hearing a lot about here, because they reproduce very quickly, and they provide a lot of meat. So, you know, this is all stuff that maybe sounds horrifying or maybe sounds too complicated for a lot of people. But for a lot of other people, it's like, oh, I've been wanting to do this forever, and now there's a really good financial reason to do it. So yeah, you know, there's an awful lot you can do. And then there's the whole self-defense thing. Yeah, you should probably be able to defend yourself in some way. And if that means buying a
Absolutely.
couple of guns, learning how to use them, not a bad time to pick that up if you've ever wondered if you should be doing it. So the basic prepping thing has an awful lot of good advice for today's millennials and Gen Z people. You know, I think they should be looking into this now as a way to get through the next 20 years.
Two thoughts have come to me as you're talking about this. The first thought is this is really how you mentioned grandparents. This is how my grandparents lived, really. And it wasn't odd or weird in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, you know, on their farm. And they had a farm in the Northwest, up in your neck of the woods. And it was just very normal to, so that's the first thing. So I think going back to that normalcy, or that trend, if you would, is going to be the new thing. Go ahead.
Andy, I'll bet another thing your grandparents did was they fixed things that broke instead of going out to
Yeah.
buy a new one, right? They had a little
Yep.
workshop where,
Yep.
whatever it was,
My
they could make it
grandfather
run
was a
again.
great at that. He was great at that. Go ahead. Yeah.
And that was normal. That was like a normal man back
Yeah.
then, unlike today. Did you ever see what's the name of that? The cartoon that takes place in Colorado. Okay.
Yeah.
Something Falls, maybe. Yeah. But anyhow, it's a big TV show cartoon, but there's an episode where the lawyers and the doctors can't fix things anymore, so they hire the handymen, but there aren't enough handymen, so they have to start paying the handymen with more and more money, and they become the richest people in town.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so we're kind of
That's
headed for something like that.
where we're headed. Well, I remember just to marvel at my grandfather, just he could fix anything. And that's
Yeah.
just what he did. He was that guy. So, go
South
ahead.
Park. South Park.
South
South Park
Park.
was
Yeah,
the
yeah, yeah,
show I was
yeah,
trying
yeah,
to
yeah.
think of. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. And by the time you get to the grandkids of somebody like that, they have no interest in fixing something, because when something breaks,
That
me too. You
was
go on Amazon or you go to Walmart, you just get a new one and you throw
Right.
the old one away, or you take it to Goodwill, let somebody else fix it. But
Yeah.
The time when that is a wise lifestyle has ended a while ago, and now it's time for us to start thinking in terms of making stuff last as long as possible.
Yeah. And another thing you brought up, I think is great advice, is just being living in community, but yet being self-sufficient, if and working those two things together, if you would, and not being depending on anybody, yet being dependent on a community, just for whether that's support or whether that's just relationships or whatever. So I think that is great advice. Work out for a little bit more, a little more granular on a portfolio. So let's say if we go through, I guess, where would you start? And again, I get this question all the time, and I'll just tell you what I tell people. I start with the bigger players, if you would, in mining or drilling or whatever have you, and then I work myself down the food chain from developers to explorers, if you would, and I just weighted appropriately. So it, yeah, how would more granular, but advice, if you would, on how to construct like stocks, because if we go to the deflationary period, all stocks are theoretically could get hit, is I guess what I'm thinking of. But yeah, what would you say to all of that?
With precious metals, which is really the basis of a wisely structured financial life right now, you get physical first. You get some gold
Right.
and silver coins, you store them in a safe place. And when you've got enough of them, then you start looking at ways to branch out into equities, to increase your exposure to precious metals. And starting with that, there are physical ETFs, which are basically stocks of companies that just get a bunch of gold and silver or whatever, put it in a vault, and then you invest in them, and they hold that gold and silver in a safe place for you. That's not 100% safe. There's still counterparty risk, because you have to trust them to have in their vaults what they say they have, but they're relatively safe when they're well run. From there, you go to the big ETFs. Those are investment companies that buy the stocks of the gold and silver miners, and they take care of the portfolio construction for you. They just go out and buy the representative stocks, and so you get some of those, and then you've got exposure to mining equities from there. And then, as you dig a little deeper into it, you start making your own decisions about which mining stocks you want to own. And from there, you start with the big guys that are easy to analyze, because they're just, Newmont is the biggest gold miner in the world, and all the analysts are looking at Newmont. And so you've got to figure it's reasonably well covered, it's reasonably it's priced close to its value and everything. And as you gain an understanding of things like mining stocks, you work your way down. There are junior miners that produce gold and silver, but not enough to be considered senior miners. But they're also they're not as widely followed. They're a lot more volatile. So if you choose wisely, they'll go way up for you compared to the other ones. And then from there, you get down into the explorers and the companies that don't actually have mines yet, but they're digging out there. They're looking for new deposits. And that's where you find your 10 baggers in the mining space. You know, the little guys who nobody really knows much about, but are still putting out pretty good drill results. So you analyze those drill results, look at other things like how experienced management is, whether they've done this before, what jurisdiction the potential mine is it in a place where you consider it to be, you know, well respected and treated by the local government, and you make a choice. And I mean, there over the past 10 or 15 years, there have been a bunch of companies that fit those criteria in the explorer space, and they've gone up 5, 10, 20 times from when they were little and unknown, you know. And so you want a few of those because that's life-changing money. If something goes up 20 times, you only need a couple of those to have made a successful life as an investor. And those are the things, and you got to be careful with those because they're addictive. Once you had something go up 20 times, you want that feeling again. And that you did it once, you're a little cocky. So you're addicted to the feeling and you're kind of cocky about your abilities. And then you can go out and buy 10 more of those things, and all of them will go bankrupt or something like that. So you need to be very careful. Do not think you're a genius when you win a couple of times in that space. But anyhow, you know, you do that, gradually work your way into the mining space. And once you have enough understanding, then it becomes a really fun game to play because, especially in times like this, where the last couple of years, the gold and silver miners have been the best performing financial sector in the world, better than cryptos, better than AI stocks. You wanted gold and silver miners. And so once something like that happens, it gives them legitimacy. And so now the next run is starting with them because Wall Street is catching on. You know, they've got these momentum charts out there where they're on their screens. Gold miners are suddenly popping up for the first time ever, you know. So the momentum money is starting to chase precious metals miners, which gives them that last big parabolic leg out there at some point. So now is still, despite those stocks having done really well for a while, it's still a good time to be buying them wisely, you know. Don't just jump with both feet into whatever has gold or silver in its name, but buy quality. And you still have a good chance of making lots of money in the next few years in those things.
So everything you just said, I've had experience with. I've hit some 10, 20 baggers, gotten cocky, and then lost it all. So yeah. So it's not for the faint of heart, but also, but it also, you use a keyword wisely, and I would add being grounded, really, and just know out of 10 of these, you'll get maybe 10 to 20 of these, you might get a 10 to 20 bagger or more out of one of those. A couple of them, you'll make some more money. A handful of them make some more money. Half of them, the other half won't go anywhere. And then maybe 5 to 10 will go broke. So you really want to have a basket, if you would, of the explorers, if you would. That would be my what I would tell people. John,
Agreed.
Before I get your final thoughts here, give us your Substack one more time and where people can go and find you. And then I'd like to get your final thoughts going into the new year.
Okay, I'm at rubino.substack.com, and it's like I said earlier, it's a newsletter aimed at coming up with actionable advice for all the stuff that we just talked about.
And give me your final thoughts really going into 26. What's your expectations really for 26, or do you have any expectations for 26?
I think there's a good chance 2026 is a wild year because there's so much that could happen. You know, like in the scenario I sketched out, where we drop into recession and then all hell breaks loose, very possible. And then you've got geopolitics and politics in the U.S., Europe, and possibly China. You know, possibly Russia. There's just an awful lot of things going on out there where you know, we're right now the U.S. we're picking a fight with Venezuela. We'll see how that goes, but there's no real way to know. And we're not out of the woods yet with Ukraine. So there's an awful lot of geopolitical stuff that could happen on top of, oh, and then the US, of course, has a midterm election that's leading the US government to do a lot of panicky kinds of things right now. I mean, 50-year mortgages, $2,000 stimmy checks for everybody. That's the kind of stuff you do when you've got an election coming up and you don't care what happens in the future because you've got to win that election. And you know, there's a really good chance that can be misinterpreted or actually correctly interpreted, where people don't react to it the way the government wants, but they react to it correctly as signs that the government is panicking, you know, and that just exacerbates everything. So yeah, 2026 could be wild, but for the people who are already loaded up on commodities, it could be a life-changing year. So we'll just have to see. I mean, I think for a lot of people, it'll be life-changing in a bad way. A handful of people, it'll be life-changing in a very good way. I think there's a decent chance this coming year is life-changing for just a broad spectrum of people in the developed world.
Yeah. Excellent. John, I want to thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for making the time for me during this holiday weekend. You have my utmost respect, admiration, and you to all my viewers and listeners off camera and talking with John or texting with him. Really, John is as gracious as he is off camera as he is on gracious. So I want to just thank you for that, and thanks for all that you do.
Thanks, Andy. Let's do this again soon.
I would love to. Thank you.